B-Pod Studios.
This is Talkin' Rock.
Talkin' Rock.
Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
As one of my friends always says, man, oh, man, is Shevitz. We have a lot of stuff to get to today. And that's for sure right here on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. As always, I like to give a plug out to the previous podcast. Yesterday had Ted Nugent. I told you guys to have some classic rockers on this week. Ted Nugent, of course, always, you know, you always got to pull him out of his shell. He's always like kind of shy, kind of quiet. All right, never mind. Anyways, check out Ted from yesterday, his drummer Jason Heartless as well, as their record, Detroit Muscle, drops coming up tomorrow as I record this on April 29th on a Friday, okay? Speaking of April 29th, a Friday, that's when Sponge is doing their Sponge pub crawl. We're going to wrap up the podcast today by talking to Vinny from Sponge as he talks about the pub crawl and everything that's going on as far as his life and his career. That guy has, like, you know, 800 projects going on all the time, one of which is with former Megadeth bassist David Ellefson. So we'll talk about that coming up here with Vinny in just a little bit. As well as, I mean, it's a lot of things going on. Like I said, Luke Morley from Thunder, their new record Dopamine drops on Friday, April 29th as well. But first, we'll talk with Joe Elliott from Def Leppard. Their new record's called Diamond Star Halos. That comes out on May 27th. Let's talk with Joe Elliott and see what's going on in his world.
I'm great. As Billy Gibbons once said, if I felt any better, I'd be twins.
Yeah, Billy has some sayings. There's no doubt about it. So the new record, Diamond Star Halos, comes out on March 27th. Of course, I'm thinking Diamond Star Halos. Where have I heard that before? And that's an old T-Rex song. And you guys big fans of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, T-Rex were the first band I ever saw live in 1971. I was 12 years old. First album I ever owned was Electric Warrior, from which the song Banger Gong comes, and the lyric Diamond Star Halo is in that particular song. And it's the reason we call the album that is, it's a go-to phrase that we've used for decades to describe a certain time period, a certain kind of lyric. So, you know, if you've got a song like, say, Little Richard's Tutti Frutti, where the lyric is a wop bop a loo bop a lop bam boom, it's not exactly Blowing in the Wind by Bob Dylan, you know. and neither is it supposed to be. It's not educational. It's just fun. It's Cab Calloway-style scatting, you know. But what it is, it's a brilliant phrase. It sings well, doesn't necessarily read well, but it sounds good. And that's what a Diamond Star Halo lyric is. Hope Cap Diamond Star Halo just rolls off the tongue. It's imagery. And we've used that technique a hell of a lot writing lyrics. And this album, it's a real throwback to all the music that we grew up listening to. We didn't really reference ourselves as much on this album. We referenced all the bands that were cool in the 70s in the UK, what we got to see on Top of the Pops, bands like Mott the Hoople and David Bowie, T-Rex, Queen, Slade, Sweet, some awesome three-minute great pop rock songs, you know. And so if we wrote a song that was along those lines, one of us would say, yeah, it's a bit Diamond Star Halo. And we'd know what it meant. It was just a reference title for us. And then when we were looking for an album title for this record, Phil just said, let's just call it Diamond Star Halo. And we all kind of went, yeah, that's a really good idea. So,
yeah, that's cool. So do you think it has some sort of throwback sound to it, or you think you're going back to your roots? Maybe, I don't know, I'm just like spitballing here, but because of the pandemic, you guys were like sitting around, I don't know, maybe thinking about the past or doing stuff like that. Did the pandemic play any part of the record writing?
No, what happened was, I mean, we've recorded this album 100% remotely. We didn't even see each other for 2 years. We did it all over the internet. And when I say that, it's easy for people to think, well, it must sound a bit disjointed or a bit like difficult to do. It was actually really easy. We have a fantastic sound engineer, co-producer, that gathered all the information from all over the world and glued it together for us. It's really no more difficult than the phone call we're having right now, where we're like 5,000 miles apart. It's still a phone call. It's still a conversation. We were able to record that way, just slightly better quality than this, of course. But we were writing because we were on a break. We were due to get together in March of 2020 to see what kind of songs we were going to have but we haven't done a gig since November. So the previous 3 months, everybody's left to their own devices to do whatever they do. And Phil had been writing, and I'd been writing, and Sam had been writing. And when we realized that we couldn't physically get together, it changed the way we thought about making the album. And we just poured all the songs that we had onto the table. And it didn't matter what kind of songs they were. So I'd written two on a piano. Phil had written one on a ukulele. And we were like, okay, cool. We'll just deal with the fallout later on. And if they don't work, we won't use them. But we were open-minded enough to just say, great, let's just get on with it. And because the tour got pushed back and then it got postponed, we now had an open recording session. It wasn't going to end at the end of April. We could plow all the way through the summer of 2020. And we ended up making this 15-track record, which we can now tour on this stadium tour, which we couldn't have done in 2020. So you can see how exciting it is for us to have pulled this record out of nowhere. We put a lot of work into it, but it was born out of extremely interesting circumstances when a lot of people were struggling. All we could do to contribute to not being in hospitals was stay isolated and don't let the time go to waste. And that's exactly what we did.
Yeah, the record Diamond Star Halo comes out on March 27th. A couple things I wanted to ask you about. First of all, the kick video is a fun video, by the way. It's good that Phil kept his shirt on for the video, so that's always exciting.
Yeah, it seems to be something that people have picked up on. It's like, wearing this shirt. Yeah.
Hey, so you guys
it's
are...
It's kind of sense to do it when we're on TV. If we're doing TV performances, he wears a shirt.
There you go. So you're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and you get a vote every year. What do you think of Dolly Parton deciding to pull her name out of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame on nominations?
Well, I read that, and I was intrigued. I mean, I could see why she'd do something like that, because I'm sure she wanted to preempt everybody else going, why is Dolly Parton in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? She should be in the Country Hall of Fame. Or the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame needs to change its name to the Hall of Fame, so that you can have rap, country, reggae, classical, baroque, you know, whatever music in it, you know. But I've also heard that whether she's pulled out or not, they're still being allowed to vote for her. So, you know, I've listened. Peace on earth to everybody. If we can have rappers in there, Eminem could be in there, then Dolly Parton could be in there.
Yeah, the guy from Devo said he voted for them. So 49 days left until you get back on stage. Are you fired up?
I'm getting fired up. We are all currently doing our own thing. We don't get together until May for rehearsals. But everybody's got their own little mojo trick and routines that they do. I mean, you know, you're in the gym every day if you're sensible enough. I work out vocally every day when I'm not doing promo. The days I'm doing promo, I tend to end up being a bit hoarse by the end of the day, so I don't sing. But then, you know, I just get back on the horse tomorrow. But yeah, I'm getting there. I'm definitely getting there. I love to start early so that I'm more than prepared. I don't want to turn up in rehearsals and go, I don't know what songs they're doing. And then you're always on the back foot trying to rush through for the first gig. I'm going to be well prepared for this.
Yeah, I forgot that
I'm
you guys.
A professional.
Exactly.
A professional, don't you know?
Yeah, after all these years, for sure. Yeah. Hey, real fast, one last thing here for you, because I'm running out of time. I know that my friend Kid Rock and I are drinking a couple cocktails last week. We brought up the movie Joe Dirt. He said that you and him actually sang on stage at Justin Timberlake's birthday back in the early 2000s.
Yes, we did. It was awesome. I'll never forget that. There was Chris Rock, Kid Rock, me, Justin Timberlake. We were all at the Hyatt, or the Riot House in LA, and we went down to some little club, and there was this band on called Kids in America, I think they were called, and they were doing songs like Kids in America. And then all of a sudden, me and Kid get up on stage to do Pour Some Sugar on Me, but totally unrehearsed. He goes into this whole rap section in the middle, and then he came out of it, and I came straight back in on the bridge, and it was like, we'd rehearsed it for like 2 weeks. It was the most astonishingly, like, just off the cuff but perfect thing that I've ever been involved in when it comes to just off the cuff things. Because, you know, it's like, let's get up on stage. Okay, fine, no problem. It's great fun. He's a He's a great guy, man. He's a really cool guy.
Well, speaking of off the cuff, he said that he told me that that line, actually, that Def Leppard sucks in the Joe Dirt movie, was actually off the cuff. He just kind of threw that out there.
Yeah, I remember I had a quick word with David Spade about that. he was kind of little perturbed that I was looking at him a certain way, going, I heard what you said, you know. I heard what you said.
I thought that was a great story he told me, so it's good that you guys can hang out and do that. So, hey, Joe, good luck on the record. Diamond Star Halos comes out March 27th. We'll see you here in Detroit with the tour with Motley Crue, Joan Jett, and Poison as well. And safe travels, and we'll see you here this summer.
See you this summer. Stay safe. Thank you.
That's funny. He must hear that Phil Collins comment all the time. As a matter of fact, I've interviewed Phil Collins from Def Leppard before, and the dude, like, never has a shirt on. Not when I'm interviewing him, but, like, you see the pictures that they always show on, like, you know, the websites and different things. But anyways, hey, I guess if you got it, flaunt it, right?
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Anyhow, up to interview number 2 today with Luke Morley from the band Thunder. Like I said in the intro, their new record Dopamine drops on Friday. Pretty interesting conversation with Luke. I've never met or interviewed anybody from the band Thunder. And Thunder, for whatever reason, hasn't cracked the U.S. We'll talk about that coming up here in a bit. And he has an interesting take on that. One which seems obvious looking back on it, but I never thought of. It's Luke Morley today from Thunder. Right here on Talkin' Rock. Hey, first of all, thanks for taking the time to talk with us. Congratulations. The new record drops this coming Friday, Dopamine. You got to be pretty fired up about that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're very pleased with it and can't wait for it to get out there and everybody hear it.
I'll tell you what, there is a lot of music. I don't even know where to start on this record because there's a lot of music and it is like, I can't think of a better term than just a landscape of stuff.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, you know, we all grew up listening to kind of classic sort of double albums in the 70s, like Physical Graffiti, Quadrophenia, Beatles' White Album. So for us, you know, the fact that we've actually gone that far ourselves this time is interesting. But we did it because we felt we had 16 songs that needed to be heard, you know. And, you know, it wasn't an easy decision to make. And our record company did look at us like we were insane, but eventually they got the idea, so we're okay.
Yeah, and it's like you mentioned Led Zeppelin and the Beatles because I was thinking about this as I was listening to the record. There are tinges of different things, and whether you did it on purpose or probably not, but sometimes I hear some Carole King. And one of the songs starts out with like this little clip that sounds like a Yes song. I heard stuff from like maybe like John Waite. It's like all over the board.
Well, that's us. I mean, listen, as the person who writes the songs, I just love all kinds of music and English, American, everything, singer, songwriter, hard rock, everything. And we're at the stage in our career now where we're kind of quite comfortable with letting all of those things come through, you know?
Yeah, speaking of that stage of your career, I think I did read about that in an interview that you did recently. It's like, yeah, you're just, you know, warts and all, you just throw it out there and whatever you want to do, you do, eh?
Yeah, we're very lucky. I mean, we have, you know, in the UK especially, we have a fantastically loyal fan base who kind of, you know, if we go on a musical journey, they come with us, and that's good, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, you mentioned that in the UK, but in the US here, it's a little bit different, isn't it?
Oh, hey, I mean, our history in the US is virtually, it's very strange. You know, the first album started great. I think we did 250,000 copies of Backstreet Symphony. Hmm. The video was all over MTV like a rash. Everything was going great. We were booked to come out on tour with it was David Lee Roth and Cinderella. And then grunge kind of blew everything out of the water a little bit. And beyond that, after that, our label wouldn't support a tour. And so we were kind of in no man's land a little bit, really. And then things kind of inspired and we found ourselves busy in other areas. And we never got to come and tour properly. But having said that, that doesn't mean we wouldn't love to come, you know, if the opportunity arose now and, you know, in whatever shape or form. So, you know, we're still hopeful that could happen at some point.
Yeah, you know what? Because I remember at the beginning of my radio career in 1989, 1990, remember playing you guys and stuff. And then it just, you know, but I didn't even think about that till you just said it. But yeah, grunge really did kind of put a damper into your trajectory, didn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, not just us, all sorts of other bands as well, I think. You know, it just kind of the acceptable face of rock music changed almost overnight in the States. And it was kind of like when punk happened in the UK. It was like a similar thing. Everything changed. Haircuts changed. Clothes changed. It was very odd. But, you know, hey, it's just one of those things. That's the music industry. I mean, our timing everywhere else is very good. It was just in the US that we came up against this, really. But, hey, you know, these things happen.
Yeah, it is weird. So when you were, I like to ask bands from other countries how important success in the US was for you guys when you started out.
Very important. I mean, you know, the cruel thing was like I say, we had a little taste at the beginning. It was like, you know, to sell 250,000 albums without even setting foot in the country. We thought we were on a kind of slam dunk there, but that's the music business. Just when you think you've got it, it slaps you around the face. You know, and, but hey, it's okay. I mean, we're very philosophical about it now. We've been very successful in other places, so I can't complain, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, you know, listen, you've done what you've loved to do for the past three decades and made a living at it.
Damn right. Yeah. And I have actually, the band hasn't toured the US, but I managed to sneak on board a tour I did a bit of moonlighting with Power Station with Andy Taylor and Robert Palmer in 97. Mm. And we played everywhere in the States. So at least I've got to do it.
Right. Exactly.
I've done it once. And it was fantastic. And all the time I was doing, I think, wow, this is such a shame. This would be so good for Thunder. But like I said, we haven't given up hope. There's still the possibility is still there, you know.
So you got a tour coming up this spring, right, in the UK primarily?
Yeah. We got five arena shows in the UK, and then we move into Europe for a series of festivals, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, is there any plans to come over to the US or not? Not right now.
There aren't any plans in concrete, but we just sort of recently actually appointed a new agent, and he's very keen to get us over there. So, you know, I mean, obviously COVID hasn't helped everything. There's been murder for all musicians, obviously. But, you know, we have, you know, it's something that we're actively investigating. And, you know, like I said, the band would love to come out.
Yeah, especially to hop on a tour with somebody, man, that would be pretty cool. But yeah, you just mentioned COVID, and I got friends in bands that did nothing for 2 years, and they put a record out, and it's like eight songs and about 27 minutes long. But you kind of did the opposite. I know you guys put out a record in 2021 as well. So, I mean, you just had an overabundance. We'll get back to the record here with Dopamine. But, I mean, are you just sitting around at home just thinking of ideas, or the juices are flowing, or how does that work?
Well, what happened was with the previous album, with All the Right Noises, because of COVID, that was recorded prior to the pandemic, really.
Oh, gotcha. And,
but when COVID happened, it then had to be postponed.
Mm, yeah.
So it was postponed 6 months. So if you like, that album was late, and this one, I guess, is kind of early because we wanted to get it done before these shows in May in the UK. So and fortunately for me, because when the last album was done, because we couldn't go out and tour, I just kind of kept my head down and kept working it and kept writing, and then we found ourselves in the studio recording new material when the last album had only been out for a week or something. So it was a bit odd, but all good, you know.
Yeah, that's a boy. Yeah, yeah. Talk about that. You just talked about the grunge scene kind of crushing things, and COVID. It's like that's like a double whammy.
Oh yeah, and the other thing in the UK, of course, although it doesn't affect our relationship with the States, is Brexit has made Europe really tough for English musicians as well. A whole load of paperwork and stuff that just wasn't there before, and obviously costs associated. But you know, we'll get through that. That's not a problem. It's just unnecessary.
Yeah.
But hey, let's not go down a political road.
That's right. Exactly. Well, you know, I mean, we don't have to go down a political road, but this record does have a political tinge to it, as did the last one, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, when you get to my age, you have to write songs about things that you think and believe in and care about, and you know, so I think the Brexit thing did make me very angry. I think I wasn't the only one. And I think that with the new album, the theme kind of essentially running through Dopamine is really one of, it's kind of about how the pandemic affects the human condition and, you know, and people being isolated. But also there's positivity in it with songs like Dancing in the Sunshine, which is, you know, let's get together and have a party and it'll be good. It'll be okay. So, yeah. There is one very overtly political song on the album called Just a Grifter, which is all about our wonderful Prime Minister.
Okay. I did I did hear that one. I was taking guesses as to who that was about. So,
yeah. Yes. Well, yes. It's fairly clear what I think of him. But hey, you know.
Now that one's a little bit more mellow. You got some piano stuff in there, and I think I read somewhere that some people were like, "Wait a second, you got female backup singers on one of the songs." I thought that was great too. There's like this whole flavor. I've even heard some, like, I don't know, like maybe like Guns N' Roses type riff type stuff. I've only had a chance to listen to the record through once, but those are just my initial impressions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think it is kind of, in terms of all the influences and stuff, that's kind of, all the kind of veins of influence through it and stuff. It is kind of all over the place. Yeah. But, hey, it's a double album. So we felt that we had room, within, like I said, we weren't setting out to make a double album, but we had 16 songs we felt needed to be heard. And they kind of do go off in various musical tangents. But hopefully the band's character and our sort of unique sound, whatever that is, comes through.
Yeah, no doubt. So is there any current bands or anything, that you've heard in the last, 10 or 20 years that kind of influence you, or no?
Well, to be perfectly honest with you, I'd like to say yes, but I'd probably be lying, because most of the stuff that I hear now, not all of it, most of it is kind of derivative, particularly in the rock area. Mm. And I think, you had after the kind of the classic rock I grew up listening to, then you had kind of the metal bands like Metallica, Anthrax, those kind of guys, sort of thrash, Sting, and then the black metal and all that coming through. I'm not really a fan of that kind of thing. I love Metallica very much, but when it gets too dark and thrashy for me, it loses melody, and I don't understand the whole kind of that for me is, I don't know what that means. Probably because I'm old, but but there's a couple of cool rock bands in the UK right now. There's one called Those Damn Crows, another one called, there's a great guitar player called Chris Barras. And funnily enough, we've got quite a few of these guys opening for us on our UK dates. Mm. We chose them, obviously because we like them. So there are things happening.
Yeah. So, I was just talking with my friend Jason. He's Ted Nugent's drummer. And, they haven't played a show since 2019. You guys did a couple shows, right? Did a Christmas show or something?
Yeah, we did two Christmas shows in the same venue. And that was kind of interesting because, we did a sort of meet and greet thing, and we were all kind of masked up, and so were the fans. So that was kind of weird. But the show itself was fantastic. It was weird. People were a little bit nervous at first. You could feel it, about standing close to other people. Mm. But obviously, by the time they'd had a couple of beers, all that went out the window and everybody was okay.
Yeah. So, how did it feel to be back on stage?
Unbelievable. Great. Really good. Emotional. Really good. Goosebumps. It was almost, we worked out that it's the longest, myself and Danny the singer, it's the longest we've gone between gigs since we were teenagers, and we're in our 60s now. So that gives you an idea of the how weird it was for us. But hey, look, same for all musicians. Look.
Yeah, no doubt. I was going to say, because there's a lot of guys out there that this was the longest that they've gone without playing. And then, of course, with recording this record, were you in the same room, or was it one of those things where you're doing it over Zoom or dropping files and stuff?
No, we all get in the same room. What we did was we all got tested and just got together like we always do. I think with the band, it has its uses. Sort of the digital kind of moving files around virtually, and that's great. But I think for a band, to record a band, you need to get performance, and the only way you get performance is if you see the whites of each other's eyes. It's that collective thing. Yeah, if you're making dance music, it doesn't matter. But I think with rock music, you've got to be in the room.
Yeah, you're looking for the visual cues or something.
Yeah, and all the best rock and roll records, they all sound like you're sitting in the room listening to the band play. If they're really, really good, one of the guys who I love, a producer called Ted Templeman, who did the Montrose, Doobie Brothers, Van Halen. And he made some of the best sounding records of the 70s. And I kind of grew up listening to that. And every record he was involved with, I felt like I was in the room, that's kind of what we try and strive for, I guess.
Was Ted Templeton responsible for Sammy getting into Van Halen?
No, I think by then he'd bowed out. And Eddie was pretty much in control of it by then in terms of recording.
Yeah.
But it's just the first couple of albums Templeman did, and yeah, like I said, I'm a massive fan of his work, and Doobie Brothers are one of my favourite bands of all time. Mm. And I love that blend of acoustic and vocal harmony and a little bit of country, but you can see all the influences in there. And, you know, I love that.
Yeah, I like the Doobie Brothers for the most part, but they have one song called Rio that I just can't wrap my head around, and I've always hated that song. You know what song I'm talking about?
I know the song. I know the album very well.
Oh, my God. It's like the rest of the record's great.
Yeah. It's jazz. It was jazz, isn't it? It's been a load of tempo changes. It's jazz at the end of the day.
It reminds me of like some 70s game show song. I'm like, this is terrible.
Yeah. It's very strange, that album. It's very eclectic. But that was kind of when Michael McDonald joined the band, right? So it kind of went a little bit. They changed a little bit. But yeah. But the good bits on the album are fabulous. Like, Take It to the Streets. Yeah. What a fantastic song.
Yeah, no doubt. So how much did Eddie Van Halen play an influence on you growing up?
Well, I tried to play like Eddie, but couldn't. Like a lot of guitar players.
I was going
to
say, yeah, you're probably not the only one, yeah.
Yeah, and the first time I saw him, I just thought he was, you know, the old thing about Robert Johnson, the devil. Well, I just looked at Eddie Van Halen and thought, no, the devil chose him. But luckily, I got to meet him. We played on the same bill as them in the UK. It was great. I got to stand sort of 10 meters away from him while he was playing. His tech let me stand next to him, and we hung out with him a bit. And he was a really, really nice guy. I'm really glad I got to meet him and got to shake his hand and tell him how he fucked up my guitar playing. But the funny thing is, when we met, we were sort of chatting, and I said, you know, we're just sort of shooting the breeze, really. And somebody told me he played golf. I said, you're playing golf? He said, yeah, I started playing golf. So what's your handicap? He said, about 19. I said, that's one thing that I am better than you at, and that's golf.
Are you a golfer? Are you?
Yeah, it slipped a bit recently. I've not had much chance, but yeah, I love to play golf.
Yeah. What other guitar players were you influenced by growing up?
Jimmy Page, Pete Townsend, yeah. George Harrison. I mean, all the kind of, you know, Keith Richards, all of those British guitar players that were around in the early 70s, I listened to. And then I obviously started discovering American music and started listening to people like Jeff Baxter and Nils Lofgren. And, you know, that a bit of that in there as well.
Now, did you see Get Back?
I did.
Yeah. Now, as a musician, did that really, you know, juice your veins to produce?
Yeah, I mean, it's an amazing piece of history, that film. I mean, what was amazing about it for me was the fact that they was all the passive kind of the passive aggression in it was hilarious. You know, they all obviously were a little bit tense at the time, but it was nice to see them. Like, the bits where they looked the happiest was when they were sitting around playing. Mm. And it was also good to hear them sound as rough as any other band. You know, so they are human. But no, it was really interesting. I think I'm not sure if you weren't really, really into music or a musician, if you'd really want to watch the whole thing. But maybe for those of us like me who are anoraks, it's great to see the whole thing. It's great, every last detail of it, you know.
Yeah, I know Jack White just recently said he's a big Beatles fan, like I am too. He says there's no doubt about it who was running that band. It was Paul, you know.
At that stage, definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
I think John was kind of having his problems with the Brown stuff at that point as well, wasn't he? So that kind of didn't help. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, Paul's trying to kind of make some sense out of all of it. He comes off the film actually very well.
Yeah, I thought he did too. And it was just so great, not being a musician or nothing. It was just so great to watch those guys create these classic songs. And to think that the video looks so good, it's like you almost forget that's 52 years ago.
You know? Sure. Yeah, it's incredible because it's so old, you know. It's 50 years old or whatever it is. It's incredible.
Yeah. Well, listen, Luke, great to touch base and talk with you. Hopefully you'll be able to come through the States. That would be awesome. I didn't realize it'd been so long since you guys were here.
Oh, man, I hope so. I really hope so. That's the last kind of thing in our career, really, that we need to scratch that itch. We need to come there. Even if we just get over and play a few kind of major cities or something, you know, I'm pretty sure we'll do it. But I just hope we can do it before we all get too old to enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah. So Dopamine comes out on Friday. That's the 29th, right? That's this Friday. And
that's correct. Yeah.
Now is it a double CD or four albums or what is it?
Yeah. So it's a double double CD and a, I think a double vinyl as well. Or was it a triple vinyl? Might be a triple vinyl.
Okay.
I'm going to have to get back to you on that.
What do you think of the resurgence of vinyl? I love it. I mean, I'm one of these guys, and it sounds kind of antiquated to say, I guess, but I don't do Spotify. I don't do any of that stuff. I just buy records.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. I mean, the 12-inch square, you know, because I always associate music with visual things. And I said to somebody earlier today, can you imagine, you know, Dark Side of the Moon without the fantastic artwork? You know, that's kind of half the thing. And half the kind of enigma around the album is the artwork. And I'm a big believer in that. I think the visual connection between, you know, the visual aspect of it and the music is very important.
Now, the one thing I did want to bring up, since we're talking about records and stuff, and I'm gonna screw this all up, but let me see if I can try. Okay, here's my stuff. All right, is anybody out there I think should close the record out?
Now we did have a little bit of a band dynamic about this. A couple of guys thought that, and I think it was two or three, and three thought that the song that it ends with was the right way to go. Because we thought, well, if it ends on the ballad, it's kind of like it's a dark song there. And we wanted to kind of finish with something that was maybe a little unusual. And the track that heads out the album is No Smoke Without Fire. It's a very odd piece of music.
Yeah.
So, but it kind of hints at maybe something else. I don't know. Like we're moving on somewhere after, you know. But yeah, I hear what you're saying. And that was, for a while, that was the plan, but then, you know, like all plans have changed.
Yeah, what do they say? God laughs when you make plans. So, yeah, don't do that.
Exactly right, yeah.
Well, Luke, thank you so much for the time. Thunder's Dopamine record drops on Friday, April 29th, and we'll look forward to checking it out, getting it on vinyl and all that kind of stuff.
Good, man. Thank you very much.
All right, this weekend, big events here in the Motor City. The Sponge Pub Crawl happens, and I've got Vinny from the band on the phone. Vinny, how's things, man?
Meltdown, always a pleasure to hear your voice and to speak with you.
Yeah, things are good here in the Motor City as we get back to some semblance of normalcy. You guys have actually played some gigs recently, haven't you?
We have, yeah. We just got back from a run out in Colorado and Utah. Prior to that, a whole West Coast run. So the Sponge is back at it. We've been pretty busy coming out of the gate in 2022.
Now, we'll get back into Sponge here in just a few minutes, but the Sponge Pub Crawl happens on Friday, the 29th of April. So if you're listening to us on Thursday or Friday as we record this, good for you if you're here. It's Saturday. Sorry about that. But Rogers Roost is the first stop, and then you guys stop at Diesel, and then the third stop is going to be at the Firehouse Pub. Now, I was just asking you about this. This isn't one of those things where people just go to bar to bar to bar and then see you guys play at the end. You guys are actually on the pub crawl with them?
Absolutely. We're in the buses. We board the buses. We're on the ride. We get off the bus together. We walk into the club like a bunch of hot shots. We play a set in every location, and then we circle right back around, like you said, to the Firehouse Pub. But that's where everybody signs in, and starting at 7 p.m. on Friday at the Firehouse Pub in St. Clair Shores.
All right, so all the information, the Sponge Pub Crawl website, I'll put it up on the description of the show so you can check that out. So do you guys do any like acoustic stuff in the bus, or is it just kind of like once you get to the venues?
Anything can happen. We have acoustic guitars. We're singing songs. Yeah, Andy Padlin is a great acoustic artist. He gets out there and plays tons of acoustic shows. Andy may bring his acoustic guitar and entertain the masses en route.
All right. Now, is Andy the one working on Nugent's latest record?
Yes.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, yes, he did.
Yeah, and that comes out
produced
on Friday.
It.
Yeah, he produced it, right. So I just talked to Ted and Jason Heartless from the band, of course, yesterday on the big show here. So you can go back and check that out if you want. So you've got a lot of things happening outside of Sponge as well. So the Lucid has a little tour coming up. Talk about what are you guys playing, the Token at the end of May. What's the date on that exactly?
I wish I could nail it down for you. It is at the end of May, but folks can always go to the Token website and check out the specific date for that. But, yeah, we got some dates on the East Coast, Midwest after that, so West Coast probably in July. So the Lucid is getting out there with the rock.
Yeah, that's May 27th. I do have that in my phone. So May 27th of Friday night at the Token Lounge. So you guys dropped a record, and now you're putting out – are you putting out some more stuff now, and there's some special guests involved? Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. The Lucid does have the full-length EP that's out, and we cobbled together an EP, and Violent J from ICP will be on two of the songs on that EP.
Wow. How do you get him? I mean, obviously, you're a Detroit legend, an icon here in the Motor City. Do you just know Violent J?
You know, I look at ICP as the legends, you know, and over the last couple of years, Jay has reached out in regards to some of the special events that they've had. I did a vocal appearance on their most recent album, and we did a remake of Heart and Soul on the new ICP record. So, yeah, it's been like this collab thing going back and forth, but it's yielded some pretty kick-ass rock and roll. Like what we've done with Violent J, he's a real talent, and the songs just kill.
So what do you say now? I haven't talked to Ellefson in a while. I got to hit him up. But what do you say to a guy like Dave Ellefson, who's the bass player in your band, of course, formerly from Megadeth, and you go, I got Violent J from ICP to sing a couple of our songs. What does Dave say?
It seems like anything goes in the Lucid, which is so cool. And because of that, the fellas were so into the idea and such a big fan of ICP, they were just knocked out that Violent J would even want to, you know, get in there and write some stuff, sing some stuff. So it's really a cool collaboration. We want to do more.
Now, you got those dates, like you said. Any other dates during the summer with Sponge? Are you sometimes you hop on some of these, like, 90s tours, right?
Yes, we do. And right now we're just doing a ton of dates. We have a date in Marysville coming up. It's got to be on the Sponge website in June. I think that's kind of, aside from the pub crawl, the Marysville date is probably the next date that we have locally.
So what else do you have going on? I know you're one of these guys that's constantly doing stuff. Anything else you can tell us about?
I think I got my plate full, Meltdown. You know, I'm always out there with the Orbisons, having fun, playing our brand of outlaw country music. So, yeah, man, just loving life, playing music, and trying to stay as active as possible.
What about the band Crud? Are you doing anything with that band?
It seems like the Crud shows up once a year.
Okay.
At someplace. I would love to do a Crud date. You know, the band is awesome. Dana, Danielle, James on drums, of course, the legendary David Black. Just getting out there with that band again would just be a phenomenal thing. There's always been talk of Theater Bazaar, so if that rolls around again for us in the fall, that would be super.
Yeah, so people that don't know, of course, you got Sponge, and people know that band, then the Orbisons, which is kind of like a, I don't know, what would you describe that, like outlaw country, bluegrass, blue country thing? What is that?
That's correct. All of the above. Yeah. Outlaw country, first and foremost, but there seems to be rockabilly
yeah.
flavors and other stuff. So, yeah, we're constantly evolving with that thing. And that band's always a lot of fun.
And then Crud is like what, like Nine Inch Nails on steroids?
Yeah, pretty much, my man. We love that band. I think people get a real kick out of seeing us play. So that's yeah, it's a thrill.
Are you trying to start a lawnmower?
I'm driving around in the band van, man. It's got rattly back seats.
Okay. I'm like, what is that noise? All right. Anyways, Vinny, we won't keep you. So the pub crawl, like I said, the description for the pub crawl will be in the description of the show. SpongePubCrawl.com if you're so inclined to check that out. And Vinny, we'll have to have maybe you and David back on before the Lucid gig here at the Token coming up on May the 27th. That's right around the corner. But always great to talk to you, Vin.
Love to talk to you, Dan. Always great to talk to you, Meltdown. Thank you for taking the time.
Always so much fun seeing the guys from Sponge, wherever they may play in and around the Motor City. I remember the first time I met them. Actually, I didn't get to meet them. They walked by me at the radio station I worked at in Buffalo. This was 1994. Rotten Pinata had just come out, and of course, that record went on to sell over a million copies and really just skyrocketed their careers and their success back in the day. But I was at a radio station in Buffalo, and we were housed in this old house down in the Allentown district, and it was a big old house, and I think that they were coming up the stairs, and I was going down the stairs. I was doing afternoon drive, and they were coming up to talk to the guy who was on after me from 7 to midnight, and that's the first time I ever had a brush with the guys from Sponge, and since then, Vinny and I have been good friends, but really good guy, super talented, so go check that those guys out at SpongePubCrawl.com. Like I said, I'll leave the link in the description of the show. Hey, thanks so much for checking it out. I have an interview coming up tomorrow. I don't know how this is going to go. This is, I mean, I've done a lot of interviews in my years. And I got, a really weird email about this interview for tomorrow. But anyways, we'll see how it goes. And we'll see if I post it. Because if it's as weird as the email, I don't know. Just, you know, follow, subscribe, and come back to the Talking Rock podcast to find out.
Thank you for listening to Talking Rock with Meltdown. You can help this podcast grow by giving it a 5-star rating and writing a review on Apple and iTunes. Plus, feel free to subscribe and share it with your friends. Until next time, thanks for listening to Talking Rock.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.